This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go to the hotline. I'm so excited to talk a little baseball with you. Cliff Corcoran is joining us, and he is from The Athletic, national beat writer. Hi, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's it going?
Hi,
good.
Cliff.
We're excited about the Indians and the opportunity that is in front of them, but we also ask that question, which a lot of people, I think, are looking at the Indians from a national perspective. How long is the window going to last for the Tribe, and how long can they keep this up? Especially knowing that, you know, Chris Antonetti said the other day, look, if people buy tickets and we've got some extra income, maybe we'll be more active at the trade deadline. What are your thoughts on the Tribe for this year, Cliff?
They've got as smooth a path to the postseason as any team in baseball. I don't think that they're quite as good as the Yankees or the Astros in the American League, but, you know, nobody's really going to challenge them. They should win that division by 10 games. The Twins are good enough to get back to the wild card, but not much further. I mean, the Indians have taken a step backwards. I don't necessarily probably have to tell you guys that, because they lost Santana, because they lost Shaw. Even Austin Jackson was good for them last year. You know, they got Jay Bruce at the deadline. All those guys are gone. And they didn't do a whole lot to replace them. I don't like Yonder Alonso all that much. He had a good May last year, and that's what they're paying for. But the core of the team is outstanding. And that's what talking about beyond this year gives you optimism for, if ownership is going to stay involved and engaged, that, you know, that window could go on for a while. Obviously, Kluber's going to age out at some point, but when you're talking about Lindor and Ramirez and the other guys in the rotation, and they keep bringing up, you know, quality arms and quality players, the Indians are a very good organization right now, and they're a very good team.
Cliff, not to freak out the fan base here, what's it going to take to keep Francisco Lindor in Cleveland long term?
Acting quickly, for one thing. You know, the closer he gets to free agency, the more tempting it gets. And, you know, we're going to see, we just had a bad offseason for free agents, so really acting now would almost be the ideal situation. Now, normally those types of extensions get signed in the spring, February and March. You know, once the season starts, players and agents, they don't really want to deal with that quite as much. We saw a couple of those with Altuve and some of the younger guys who got deals in Cincinnati and such. But next year, you're going to get Machado out there, and Machado's going to get paid. This, what we saw this offseason, is not going to apply if Manny Machado hits the free agent market healthy. He's going to be 26. He's one of the best players in the game. He's playing shortstop this year, which means even if he does sign to be a third baseman next year, Lindor can make a one-to-one comparison, and now that he's got a 30-home-run season under his belt, he can say, well, he's a power hitter, I'm a power hitter. We both play ridiculous defense. If Manny Machado goes out there and gets $300 million, maybe more, I mean, he could honestly get $400 million. Francisco Lindor can say, well, I'm worth that because I'm like him. So act now.
Cliff, help me out with this. Before the playoffs last year, most people would say the Indians are better than the Yankees. The Yankees beat the Indians in the playoffs, and they pick up Giancarlo Stanton. What's the gap between the Indians and the Yankees right now?
You know, a lot of it's going to come down to health and the starting rotation for the Yankees. Obviously, the Yankees lineup is just way better. And at this point, the Yankees bullpen is way better than just about everybody. You know, the Indians lost Shaw, and the Yankees retained the arms that they added last year. Canely and Robertson are still there. Their bullpen is maybe the best we've ever seen. So there's a big gap there. But the Yankees rotation is, they've got some guys there who the upside is good. You know, Severino could have another Cy Young quality season, but he could also fall back significantly. He's just had the one positive season. He's a young arm. CC Sabathia's got a lot of mileage on him. Sonny Gray has been up and down in recent years. Tanaka's been up and down. Didn't really pitch too well during the regular season. He was better in the playoffs. He's got the elbow concern at all times with him. you know, the Yankees' rotation could crumble. They have some young arms in the upper minors that could fill in, but those guys are untested, have never seen the major leagues before. There could be an adjustment period for them. There's a weakness on that team for sure. You know, the Indians, I think, are better balanced in terms of having quality lineup, quality rotation, quality bullpen, but none of those individual units, with the exception of the rotation, is as good as the Yankees. Obviously, the Indians have the better rotation, but there again, health is going to be an issue because you always, Cookie Carrasco is always a guy who seems to miss a few starts, and Santana's already on the, Danny Salazar is already on the DL there. So there's going to be some issues there. I don't think the gap is very large, but I do think the Yankees are ahead right now.
Cliff Corcoran joining us, covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic. You touched on it earlier, Cliff, when Andy asked you about the line from Chris Antonetti about attendance and everything else. And here in town, everybody looks at the Indians and wonders why they don't spend like crazy. And some of the other teams, you hear Yankees, Tigers were spending like crazy forever. From a national perspective, from a baseball perspective, how are the Indians thought of as an organization?
I think based on the success they've had in recent years, based on they've been at the forefront in terms of bullpen management, obviously getting to the seventh game of the World Series, 102 wins last year. I think right now the Indians are very well regarded throughout baseball. In terms of the organization, in terms of spending power, I think they're still seen as a mid to small market team, and maybe that's what you're asking about. Carlos Santana, I really thought Carlos Santana would come back and remain in Cleveland because it was such a perfect fit and the team had so much success and he seemed to have, that clubhouse seems to have such a positive vibe and such a cohesion between all the players. I thought he'd want to come back. I thought the Indians would pay him to come back because he probably signed for a little more than he's worth, but it wasn't like a break the bank. It was a $70 million contract. He's not getting Eric Hosmer, Bryce Harper-type money. And not only that, but he left, and then they replaced him with maybe the fourth or fifth best option on the market in Yonder Alonso. So that doesn't impress very much from an outside or inside perspective, that the Indians probably could have done better at first base, even if they didn't bring Santana back. That was a little bit of a test, and I think they failed it. I could be wrong, and Alonso could surprise people, but I don't think it's going to happen. So to that degree, you kind of go, oh, well, that's, that was disappointing. A couple seasons, deadlines ago, adding Andrew Miller was a big thing. Last year they added Jay Bruce, so they've been aggressive at the deadline. But again, it doesn't seem like, is Miller going to stick around? He'd like to, but are they going to pay him to do it? I don't know. They could flunk that test again this offseason. So, I think in terms of, obviously, the success you can't argue with, in terms of the clubhouse, in terms of Francona, the bullpen, the rotation, there's so much to like about the Indians franchise and the team on the field. But the little tests about how well is the ownership going to spend to keep this team? And again, I'm not talking about $200, $300 million contracts, except for maybe Lindor. But that's a long-term sort of situation they don't really have to address right now. But these little corrections as they go, are they losing some ground there? And it seems like maybe. And again, with Miller being a free agent this offseason, they'll get another test there.
Cliff, let's talk about Jason Kipnis for a second. And are we going to hear his name all season long about maybe being available for everybody else? It was available in the offseason. There are questions that Ramirez is a better second baseman than Kipnis, and you could have a stronger infield if you had Lindor and Ramirez playing up the middle. I'm just wondering how the Kipnis thing is going to play out here, especially also knowing that the Indians are extremely loyal to guys that they believe in, like Kipnis, like Michael Brantley. It would have been easy for them to turn the page on Brantley as well. Kind of fill in the blanks on Kipnis' story moving forward into this season.
Kipnis is a tough player because he has this history of bouncing back and forth between fantastic near MVP quality seasons and seasons where he's just not helping at all, if not actively hurting, whether because he's hurt or just not producing. And he's bounced back and forth time and again. I think the ideal situation for the Indians is to have a productive Jason Kipnis playing second base for them, and if they do, I can't see any reason why they'd get rid of him when they own him next year, and they have an option on him for 2020, and they've got a contend now team. I see Jason Kipnis as a central part of that if he's producing. And he had a good spring, or at least did the beginning of the spring. He was hitting every other ball out of the ballpark. You know, if Jason Kipnis is the player he can be, that's the way you want to set things up. Because, yeah, maybe Jose Ramirez is better defensively at second base than Jason Kipnis, but your options at third base are not going to be better than a productive Jason Kipnis is going to be in your lineup. You know, I'd rather keep him there, keep Ramirez at third. That's what you want to see. And then the other question is, okay, well, if he's productive, you're not going to want to trade him. If he's not productive, what's the point in trading him? You're not going to get anything for him. I mean, unless there's just an idea of we're tired of the back and forth with this guy, we want him off the roster, we want to devote that spot to something else. But he'd have to tank. It's almost like a cutting a guy type of situation. And then what does that do to your clubhouse? Like I was saying before, you know, the Indians have such a positive vibe about them. And I don't put a ton of stock in clubhouse chemistry and all that kind of thing. But I think, you know, if you've got a team, for one thing, the Indians, like I say, they should win this division by 10 games. They're not going to be involved in a battle for the postseason during the season. And if, you know, you come off just missing winning a championship 2 years ago. Last year they went 102 games, but, you know, don't get as far as they think they should have in the postseason. And then this year, okay, you're cruising to another title, but then in the middle of that they trade a player who's maybe very well liked in the clubhouse. It feels like things are starting to go downhill, right? I don't see the point of that. So as far as I see it, Jason Kipnis is going to be a Cleveland Indian, you know, at least through the end of this season. And if he's productive, he should remain so. And if he's not, maybe they can figure it out in the offseason that we want to move on from Jason Kipnis. But I don't see the point. I don't think it's going to be a constant thing during the season.
All right, Cliff, thank you. We really appreciate your time. Hope we can talk to you in the future as well. Make sure you read him at The Athletic. He is a national correspondent for baseball. Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks for having me.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you, Cliff.
All right, good stuff. A lot of things to talk about based on this conversation. Let's do that. We really haven't talked about Indians' expectations at all. And let's maybe do a little bit of that when we come back. I'm wondering what are your hopes and dreams for the Indians this season? I think they set the bar 2 years ago by going to the World Series. What are your hopes and dreams for this team going into this year?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.